You are listening to Pastor Talk.
You know, a couple generations ago, it was very common for a church to be homogeneous, and people were drawn into that. You know, not only just not just people, but programming. Mm-hmm. So, you know, think of our own denomination, Marty, the Southern Baptist Convention. All of the programming was the same across mm-hmm. all of the churches because that's what people wanted. And all the churches looked the same. The architecture's the same. So people were, it was the in thing two or three generations ago to meld into a homogeneous group.
Welcome to Pastor Talk, the podcast of Lifeway Pastors, giving you the tools and encouragement you need to shepherd your flock well. I'm your host, Marty Durin. My guest today on Pastor Talk is Sam S. Rainer III. Sam serves as president of Rainer Research and is the co-founder of Rainer Publishing. He's the lead pastor of West Bradenton Baptist Church in Bradenton, Florida, where the sun always shines. Sam writes, speaks, and consults on church health issues. You can connect with him at his blog, samrainer.com. And for those of you who do not know, it's R-A-I-N-E-R, so samrainer.com. Looking forward to talking to Sam today about organizing your church for growth. Here's my conversation with Sam Rainer. Sam Rainer, it is good to have you on Pastor Talk.
Well, thank you, Marty. Good to be with you.
How is the weather down there in sunny Florida?
I say mucho calor. Man, it's always warm, and I love it.
That's awesome. It's up here today in Nashville. It's like somebody punched a hole in the sky. It's just rain everywhere.
Yeah, it's paradise down here, so you will not hear me complaining about the weather. Even the summer heat is awesome. I love the humidity, love the heat. Bring it on.
Well, you know, that sounds like a good problem to have. I do appreciate the fact that you don't take pictures of your feet and post them on Instagram.
Yeah, I try not to do that, too often. But especially in the wintertime, us people from Florida tend to rub it into you guys up north.
We can take it. Hey, tell us a little bit about yourself. Not everybody who's listening will recognize your first or your last name. So who are you and how'd you wind up in Florida?
Well, my name is Sam Rainer, and I am a local church pastor. So of all of the things that I do professionally or as far as my job, my profession, calling perhaps, pastor is the biggest one of all. I love pastoring the local church. I have a specific calling into the established church, so the churches that have been around a long time. Love the established church. I do a few other things. I own a publishing company, so we publish some books and do some research on the side as well, and just a project-based research.
Excellent. Well, what we're going to be talking about today on the podcast is organizing your church for growth. Organizing your church for growth. So a lot of pastors struggle with the whole thing, the whole concept of organization. It's just like it's like an unknown tongue to them. And a lot of guys struggle to put things together in any kind of way that's meaningful structurally. And then some pastors, it's just over programming, over organization. And I guess there's a balance somewhere, but let me just start with a simple question. Is it even important to organize? I mean, isn't this one of these things like, you know, open your mouth and let God fill it with the word? Shouldn't you just let the Spirit lead and whatever happens, happens?
Well, sure. Yes. To answer your question, should the Spirit lead? Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Holy Spirit should lead everyone, should lead every church. That being said, there is something to having an orderliness to your church, a structure to your church. I do think that every church needs a structure. Not every church needs the same structure, mm-hmm. but you certainly, as a shepherd, need to think about how your people are discipled. So if you're going to disciple people more than, say, four or five, you're going to need to put some sort of structure to that. I wish I could say that there's one structure that works best, one type of theory and organizational theory that works best, but there are many. I am not going to bore you with all of the theories, but I'll answer your question and say spirit-led is primary, and structure is certainly important.
I guess part of that's the struggle, though, where it's a blessing and a curse to have so many options to choose from. If you're leading a church and you want to organize this particular ministry or organize every ministry in some way, and you choose something that isn't a good cultural fit for your church, it could be a problem, or isn't a good strategic fit. So is having more options, what are the challenges of having more options to choose from as opposed to less?
Yeah, the problem, obviously the problem with more options is just you have a lot of people going in a lot of different directions. So, to address the elephant in the room, should you have a simple church? That was a book that came out a few years ago.
I've heard of that.
Most people have heard of it. And I love the theory mm-hmm. of a simple church, but it's really an impossibility to some degree because you could, well, let me put it this way. A lot of people read Simple Church and they read it wrongly. They created a structure that was simple for the staff. When in reality, what you should be doing is you should be creating a structure that is simple for your people in the church. Mm-hmm. So if you have a simple structure for your people and, you know, it's something like, okay, I know how I am being discipled. I know the types of things that I need to be doing as far as serving. I know at what time I'm supposed to worship. A lot of times what's most simple for your people is most complex for the staff. Because it's hard, you know, it's really hard to get to a point as a church to where you've got a simplified structure for your people. So I'd say that's problem number one is don't create a structure for the pastors, for the chief disciple makers of the church, the ones that are leading. Mm-hmm. You need to create a structure that's most accommodating for your people.
And when you say it's harder for the staff, when you say it's harder for the staff to make it simpler for the people, is that ongoing or is that like to get the structure in place?
Oh, it's always ongoing.
Okay.
You never arrive as a church. You can never get to a point where, okay, you know, we're structured appropriately now. It just never happens because churches are always in flux. And churches hopefully are growing. That's the goal, right? So if you're always adding people, and then people are passing away too, so you know, that's a constant struggle as well, mm-hmm. Is you have a lot of generations in the church. So, you know, one of the things that I often speak on is, you know, is it harder now? And it is harder now. And one of the reasons that it's harder to lead a church now is simply because you have so many people from so many different generations. Mm-hmm. So if you want a multi-generational church, which I think should be the goal of every church, you know, back in the day, in 1900, the average lifespan of an infant was about 45 years. 45 for male, 47 for female.
That means I'm already dead. I've been dead for a while, actually.
I'm sorry, Marty. That's a shame.
I really feel bad about it.
But in 2000, the average lifespan of a male was like 75, 77. And in the year 2000, the average lifespan of an infant female was almost 80 years old.
Wow.
So back in the day, you know, 100 years ago, you just have two generations in the church. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every now and then you'd have grandpa, grandma. But now you have five generations in the church. So it is a lot harder today. And you talk about creating a structure that's accommodating for Gen Z and for, you know, the builder generation. It's hard because the builders learn quite differently than Gen Z. So you will never, to answer your question, you're never going to be able to create a structure that is the structure for the next 20 years. It's always in flux.
Just to kind of burrow into that a little bit, even in 1900, where you only had the two generations typically, they really weren't that different because everybody who lived in 1900 that lived in an urban area, for what that was, basically experienced life the same if they were 20 or if they were 50. This is pre-World War I. Everybody who lived in a rural area experienced life the same if they were 20 or if they were 50. And so even though you had two generations, you basically only had one type of life experience.
Yes.
The issue I think we're dealing with now with five generations is there are five legitimately different life experiences in the same church. So you have different learnings, different experiences, different ways of interacting with the world. So some are technologically advanced, some are not, some are readers, some are not, you know, those types of things. So it's not just that we have five generations and we've got from, you know, birth to 90 instead of birth to 60. We have five different kinds of people in the average congregation. Is that right?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And add to that this idea that, you know, in the 1940s, you know, generations were by and large homogeneous. Mm-hmm. So we were segregated for the most part. You were inclined to hang out with people who were like you. So, you know, a couple generations ago, it was very common for a church to be homogeneous, and people were drawn into that. You know, not only just not just people, but programming. Mm-hmm. So, you know, think of our own denomination, Marty, the Southern Baptist Convention. All of the programming was the same across mm-hmm. all of the churches because that's what people wanted. And all the churches looked the same. The architecture's yeah. the yeah. same. So people were, it was the in thing two or three generations ago to meld into a homogeneous group. Now it is completely the opposite. The younger generations are drawn to heterogeneous groups. So it makes it even more complex. You're not only talking about generational differences, you're talking about a paradigm shift mm-hmm. in what people want out of a church. So you got one generation that's telling you, we want everything the same. And you have another generation that's telling you, no, we need it all different. Yeah, your world's apart with generations, and bridging those gaps is very difficult. Creating a structure that accommodates everybody is especially difficult.
So and I'm just going to throw a number out as far as the size goes, because we have a lot of listeners who are smaller church pastors, some medium, some large. So let's just choose a number that's 250. Is it feasible to think that, that a lead person can, strategize or think through a way that the structure of the ministry or ministries in a given local church of 250 people with 4 to 5 generations actively participating at some level, that the structure can be used to meet those needs, so that the trellis is shaped and built in the right height and the right width and everything else, so that the vines of all those different groups can effectively grow and reproduce or produce?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is possible. So we bring up the problem of, hey, it's harder, but I would hope, I mean, that's what we're trying to do here is, create something that is accommodating to everyone. So, one of the things that we've, just to use one example. So let's talk about groups, mm-hmm. just, you know, small groups, Sunday school, whatever you call it. Just use that as an example, as kind of a case study in the church. So we want everyone in a group. We want everyone that would attend our church or join our church to be involved in a group. We have 7 expectations of every church member that's part of our covenant. That's actually expectation number 2, that I will grow in one of the life groups. Mm-hmm. Now, so that's the structure. You know, we have these 7 expectations, but the way that we accommodate all the generations is our groups are very different. So we have one group that's of the older generation, and they have 120 people in that class.
Wow.
And they're all crammed into our chapel, which seats 80 people. Get that picture. And we have one guy who leads it. He's 78 years old. I'm not supposed to have favorite church members, but he's one of our better church members. Maybe he's a great guy. He gets it. He's just an awesome guy. He's our moderator. And he teaches that class, and he's really kind of the shepherd mm-hmm. of that group of people. That's a master teacher model. And they have a whole system of care and charts and graphs and, you know, phone tree chains right. to contact people. Well, our group of 10 that has, you know, it's basically a group that is facilitated with a conversation. That particular small group that, you know, meets on Wednesday nights that's full of younger people is completely different than the group that meets on Sunday mornings and more of a traditional Sunday school master teacher model. So all that we say is you just need to be in a group. Mm-hmm. And then we allow for the flexibility within that to accommodate for different types of groups that people need. So I think you're probably going to find it more difficult if you make everyone attend the same exact type of group, because you just won't draw on the generation mix that you might.
So is that
if
a case?
Only, go ahead.
Is that a case where forcing a structure could in the end impede the growth that you're trying to facilitate?
Yeah, and not only impede growth, like numerical growth, but the spiritual growth of your people, mm-hmm. because you know Gen Z just learns differently than say the builder generation. The builder generation is completely comfortable in, for the most part, again, we're generalizing here. I mean, you could probably point out exceptions all over the place. I could probably point out exceptions in my own church. But the builder generation, by and large, okay with a master teacher model. That's what they grew up with. That's how they were taught. That's how they learned. That is the expectation that they have. You know, Gen Z, completely different. So, yeah, I think that you can hurt yourself by limiting the options. Maybe not even limiting the options, just limiting the flexibility that you have within the church. So, you know, every pastor comes in, you got the new pastor, what have you. They've got those two groups that you're like, or 10 groups that you have, depending on the size of your church. It's like, they just don't fit. They just don't fit the model. And I encourage those guys, just leave them be. Mm-hmm. Are they teaching good doctrine? Yeah, they're teaching good doctrine. You know, are they at odds with the leadership? No, they're not at odds with the leadership. Man, just let them be alone. You're always going to have these one-offs. You're always going to have these things that just don't quite fit in the church, don't quite fit your ideal, don't quite fit your models. I say leave it alone. Idealists make for very poor pastors.
And there, and in some of those cases, I mean, in our church, we've got a couple of those master teacher type groups that are, predominantly older folks. And there are some very practical issues that go along with that as well. So if you're a pastor and your driving passion is to, you know, have groups out in the community and you're trying to get them into homes and stuff, and that's a great thing, and we're trying to do it at our church. But from a practical sense, people who are 75 and 80 years old don't typically drive at night, so that's going to cut them out for, you know, 6 months out of the year if you're, depending on yep. what part of the country you're in, being able to participate. They tend to get up and about in the mornings, and so they're active and alert and ready to do stuff, so a morning meeting is a much better deal for them. One of our, and this was an odd insight, but one of our senior adults came to me recently and said, Marty, I picked the room that my group meets in because it's close to the bathroom. He said, that's a very practical thing. He yep. said, but it's what we need. And I was like, you know, I wouldn't have thought about that in 100 years, but it makes perfect sense. So if you go in and, you know, you're blowing everybody out and you're going to demand this and that, and we're going to give, you know, you got to move this room, that room. Some people have thought about some things in advance. They didn't just show up last night with they didn't just show up last night in a bundle of blankets, you know?
Yeah. And even, you know, even worse, we need to split your class, yeah. right? you want to kill it all real quick, go to groups like that and just say, hey, we really need you guys to split up. Yeah, good luck with that one. That's the one that really will get under their skin. And they won't do it, by the way.
Yeah.
They just won't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can force it, and they're just – it doesn't matter. They're not going to do it. So, yeah, there's sometimes like, hey, we want our groups to multiply, but that group over there, it just isn't.
Some of them miraculously start losing their way to the main auditorium too.
What's that?
Some of them miraculously start losing their way to the main auditorium. They're able to make it to Sunday school, but somehow or another, not able to make it to church anymore.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen that, where out of protest, because they don't like what's going on with the leadership of the church, yep. I will go to my group. I will even give my offering through my group, mm-hmm. but I am not going to go to the worship service, and I'm not going to give through the offering plate.
So, I mean, clearly, if we were framing this discussion another way, this is one of those, you know, choose your hill on which you're going to die type of conversations. But in the context yes. of this conversation, it's be flexible with your structure so that the tool or the structure that you're using actually meets people's needs and enhances their ability to participate and minister rather than restricts those things.
Yes. And there are certain hills to die on. You know, doctrine.
Sure.
You know, if there's heresy being taught in my church, I'll lose my job. I'll lose my life over that. I mean, there's certain doctrines I will literally die for.
Sure.
I am not going to die on the hill of master teacher versus conversation facilitated groups. I'm just not. That I've got much bigger fish to fry as a pastor. And by the way, if you are creating those battles as a pastor, I think you're probably picking fights you don't need to pick.
Yeah. At what point, and I've seen, and this conversation's not new, but there'll be some folks listening that it's either been a while since they've thought about it, or they're just now getting to one of these places. It's generally accepted that around when you have 75 in your small group or your Sunday school or whatever you call it, your groups, that you have to change your structure a little bit to get more leadership involved. Then I think there's one maybe at like 150 and then 300 or something like that. Where what are some of those generally accepted areas where you have to start looking at a different type of a different number of people who are in leadership who can help carry the load of training or encouraging or contact or whatever? What are some of those? So if somebody's listening and says, we're kind of stuck right here. I wonder if there's a transition point that we're approaching that I'm not remembering.
Yeah. So the median church size in the United States is 75 people.
Okay.
So just keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. So half of the churches in the U.S. are larger than that. Half are smaller than that. So you can just think of your regular old church somewhere in the United States, urban or suburban or rural, as being about 75 people. So I tend to think in terms of 75 people increments.
Okay.
And each of those additional 75 people bring different structural, operational issues within the church. So, you know, a church of 75, typically led by one pastor, many times bivocational. A church of 150 typically has a full-time pastor, maybe one associate. Then you go to like 225, 300, mm-hmm. 375. Each of those tiers kind of has a little different way of thinking, a little different way of structuring the church. Because, you know, if you've got a church of 2,000 and you're acting like a church of 100, you know, there's some very dangerous things that could be done. Like, for instance, the financial side, it's a little easier to keep track of $100,000 in budget and the expenses that are there than it is like a $2 or $3 or $4 million budget. Mm-hmm. And so you need at that, you know, you get up towards $1 million on your budget, you know, even probably before then you're doing purchase orders. You have more people involved in the accountability side. A church of 50 needs to have the same level of accountability, but you just don't need nearly as many people involved. And you probably don't need to be doing purchase orders for, you know, something of $100 in the way that you may with a larger church. So yeah, there's just all sorts of things that change as you get larger or smaller, for that matter. You throw in the mix multi-site versus giga church on one campus. Mm-hmm. You know, you could have a church of 3,000 that's six campuses, and then you could have a church of 3,000 that's one campus. Those are completely different structural issues.
Mm-hmm. What's when you think about leadership in church, whether it's and let's just say for this particular moment, let's just say lead pastor, senior pastor, the pastor. You think about pastoral leadership. What's one ingredient that is often missed as the pastor's trying to lead, concentrating on sermon prep, you know, ministry in the hospital or whatever? What's one of the leadership ingredients that seems to be missed that can contribute to organizational dysfunction within a local church?
So I would say two things. One is a lack of evangelism. Everywhere I look, every church that I'm a part of, good grief, my own church, my own life, I just don't see a whole lot of evangelism going on. And by evangelism, I mean just out and out proclaiming the gospel to people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm an incarnational guy. You know, I'm not necessarily saying it needs to be program driven. I'm not saying you need to go door to door and beat people up with Bibles. I mean, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying I just don't see a lot of people out there just sharing their faith, just saying, here is what Jesus has done in my life. He has changed my life. Here is how you can accept him. I just don't see a lot of that. So I think a lack of evangelism is like one of the biggest problems in the church right now, period. I think we become evangelistic and it solves a whole host of issues. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. That's a big kind of general thing that I see. The other thing pertaining specifically to leaders and most especially to lead pastors is the lack of a willingness to be held accountable. I see a lot of people being forced to be held accountable.
Right.
You know, you have a personnel committee, you have reviews, you have an elder board or what have you. What I what I think is missing, not just in the church, but in organizations, in business, in media, in academia, is leaders who say, I want to be held accountable, I desire to be held accountable, and I am going to be proactive in making sure that people do hold me accountable to the things that I say I'm going to do. I think the one of the biggest missing ingredients in leadership in America, so let's talk, you know, kind of North America, mm-hmm. you know, culture, is just a complete lack of willingness to be held accountable and a desire to be held accountable. I mean, that is just gone.
Is it kind of one of those things that slipped away and nobody's being proactive at getting it back? Was it never here, or are people actively working against accountability?
It's probably a mix of all of the above. You know, we've put a lot of stock and a lot of weight on leaders. And, you know, I don't want to get into all the technicalities of leadership theory, but there's a great book out there called Leadership Without Easy Answers by Ron Heifetz. And he calls it the leadership straitjacket. You know, the followers tell the leader, you know, hey, solve our problems. And the leader promises, okay, I can solve your problems. And then the followers say, okay, you'll solve all of our problems. So we'll give you all of the power. So go do it. And the leader ultimately fails because you can't solve other people's problems. And then the people get all mad and they say, well, we're going to take your power away. And then they remove the leader and they go to someone else who they think can solve all their problems. And when that person doesn't do it, then they take the power away from that leader again and go get a new one. It's this leadership straitjacket. It's this vicious cycle. I fear churches are doing that too. It's like, if we could just get the right pastor, you know, he'll get us back on the right track. And the pastor comes in and he's like, yes, I'm your guy. I'm called. I'll be the visionary. I'll be the one that sets the tone. And inevitably it fails, or it just flops, or doesn't quite go as planned. And the guy moves on, the church moves on, and the whole thing starts all over again. Yeah. So I think pastors need to do a much better job of what Ephesians 4 talks about, equipping the saints, mm-hmm. training up the saints for ministry. I think we give that lip service, but pastors especially like that feel, that attention of, ooh, I'm the guy that can fix it, and you can't.
Yeah.
And I see it as, I mean, even healthy churches, even churches that people talk about, you know, they've got this charismatic figurehead who solves all the problems. And I think it's a very dangerous place to be. I think the church is going to hurt in the long run because of it.
Been talking to Sam Rayner, pastor at First Baptist Church of Bradenton, Florida, about organizing your church for growth. Thanks, Sam, for being here.
Hey, always, I've got lots of opinions. I'm glad to share them. So anytime you want to talk, Marty, I'm glad to talk.
That's awesome. We'll have you on again. Pastor Talk is the podcast of Lifeway Pastors and is hosted by Marty Duren. That's me. Join us each week as I interview pastors, authors, professors, and others to help your ministry as you seek to shepherd your flock well. Until next time, this is Marty Duren.